Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. Our text for this week, the Old Testament text, is Deuteronomy chapter 26, verses 5 to 10. This is the Old Testament lesson for the first Sunday in Lent in Lectionary Series C. And it's an important text in the history of Old Testament theology in the 20th century. The German theologian Gerhard von Rath, in his book Theology of the Old Testament, describes this text as the central confessional statement around which all the traditions that eventually became the Pentateuch coalesced. We would probably take exception with von Rath's understanding of this, the role of this text in the formation of the Pentateuch. Nonetheless, it is an important text. Deuteronomy 26 establishes a Thanksgiving ritual in which the Israelites recognized the blessings that they had received from God when he gave them the land that he had promised to them. The text begins with the first few verses, the Israelite bringing his offering and giving it to the priest, and the priest placing it on the altar. And then our text begins with verse 5, and we'll pick up there. Then you shall answer and say, in the presence of Yahweh your God. Nothing particularly difficult so far. Arami oved avi, a lost Aramean was my father. Now, the King James, of course, translates oved as wandering, and that's not really so bad. It has been used to give the impression that the Israelites were a nomadic people, and that's probably not the sense of the word here. The word here appears to be connected with the use of the verb gur later in the verse, which means to be a person without a state, to live as a resident alien in a country. The point here is not that they were nomads, but rather that they were outsiders living in a land where they had no protection under the law. Avav, which means to go astray or to be lost, it's okay to certainly translate it wandering, but that can give rise to the wrong impression. So I prefer to translate, a lost Aramean was my father. Now the next clause. Yared Mitzrayimah, here the hey directive on the end of Mitzrayim, he went down to Egypt. Yagar Sham Binte Ma'ah. Here's the verb gur that I mentioned a moment ago. And he sojourned there. Again, this word sojourn, gur, means to live as a resident alien in a country. He sojourned there, binthei ma'at, as literally, as a people of a little bit. That is to say, little in number. This is an attributive construct of extent. Gazanius Couch describes it in paragraph 128n. And here the baith on the front of methay, word for people, is a baith of essence. And so they lived as a methay ma'at, a people of a little bit. That is to say, a little people, a people who were few in number, in effect. A numerically small group is what's being communicated here. And finally, the last phrase, Vahisham Lagoy Gadol Wa Atsum, I'm sorry, no, wow, Atsum Warav. And he became there a people mighty and plentiful. Here we have the idiom Haya plus Lamed on Goy. Haya plus Lamed typically means to become. So they started off a numerically few people and became a people of great number. And then also, of course, the great strength that goes with being great in number. Verse 26. Vayareu ofanu b'mitzrayim v'anunu. Vayanunu. I'm sorry. Vayanunu. And the Egyptians did evil to us. Here, this the verb here at the beginning of verse 26, vayareu, is hiphil. In the call, this means to be evil, and the hiphil means to treat someone in an evil manner, to evilize them, if you will, to do evil to them, we would say. So the Egyptians did us evil, and they afflicted us. Here's the verb PL from Ana, third A. Now, so the Egyptians did us evil and afflicted us. Vayitanu alenu ovada kashe. And here from Natan, call wa consecutive from Natan, here not to give, but so much as in the sense of to put or place. They put upon us harsh servitude, avoda kasha, a harsh servitude. So they did us evil, and they put upon us a harsh servitude. Verse 7. Vanitz'ah el Yahweh Elohe avofenu, and we cried out to Yahweh, God of our fathers. Here the wow on the front, Nitzach, probably indicates result. As a result of this harsh servitude, you see, we cried out to Yahweh, who was the God of our fathers. Here, and in the passages that, in the verses that follow, this text picks up language very common in the book of Exodus. And this connection of Yahweh with the God of our fathers is prominent in Exodus 3, when God appears to Moses on Mount Sinai, and again in Exodus 6, when he again appears to Moses after Moses goes to Pharaoh and says, "Let my people go," and Pharaoh says, "Ha! Build sticks without straw." And so here we get intentional intertextual play, if you will, picking up the language and phraseology of the book of Exodus all throughout the rest of this passage. So we cried out to Yahweh, the God of our fathers, Vayishma Yahweh el kolenu, and Yahweh heard our voice, Vayyar eth anienu, Vayeth amalenu, Vayeth lachkatsenu. And he saw our affliction, here's a noun, our affliction, and our amal, our trouble, common word for trouble in the Old Testament, and our lachatz, our oppression. So they cried out to God, and God heard them. Verse 8, Vayotzienu Yahweh Mamitzrayim, here another wow resultative, I think. As a result of hearing, you see, what did Yahweh do? Yahweh brought us out from Egypt, min plus Mitzrayim. As a result of hearing, Yahweh brought us out of Egypt. Bayad kasacha v'bizroach natuya. Again, a phrase straight out of the book of Exodus. With a strong hand and with an outstretched arm. Both ways of sort of characterizing strength and power. With the great fear and with signs, othoth, and with mothim, with wonders, a wonderful act, referring, of course, to the plagues, ultimately to the crossing of the Red Sea and the destruction of Pharaoh's army here. Again, this language is straight out of the book of Exodus. Very common there. Verse 9. Vayvienu el ma'akom hazeh, and he brought us to this place. Giphiel from Bo, nothing exciting about that. Vayitain lanu et ha'aretz hazot, and he gave to us this land. And now in a positive, describing the land further, Eretz Zavath Chalav Ludavash. Here a participle, feminine participle, Zavath, from the verb Zavath, a land flowing, Chalav Ludavash, flowing with milk and honey. Here we have this phrase used adverbially. You know, again, noun phrases used adverbially in Hebrew are quite common. They're always most or less stuck at the end of clauses or sentences or verses, as this one is. And we just sort of have to fit, you know, say how best should we fit this verb, this adverbial phrase in. In this case, you see, it describes what the land is flowing with, not with oil. You know, someone's pointed out that Israel is the only place in the ancient Near East that doesn't have oil. That's not quite true, but it's a good point anyway. But the land was much more fertile in ancient times than it was today. Today, if you go to Israel, this description of a land flowing with milk and honey, well, it pales a bit, at least in some parts of the country. But in ancient times, the land was more fertile than it is today, and was a fair description of what it would have been like. Now, then, the last verse 10. Atahine. Here we get this strong rhetorical break here in the sentence. Atah used as a discourse marker to indicate the point that the person has been building up to. So he said what God has done, how God has heard them. He brought them to this place. And now, in other words, the point I'm coming to is this. Behold, I have brought Habithi et Reshith Peri Ha'adama. I have brought the start of the fruit of the earth, literally. The beginning of the fruit of the earth. We usually translate something like first fruit in English, sort of King James translation. But literally the start of, this is the word that begins the Old Testament. Bereshit, bara Elohim. At the start, God created the heavens and the earth in Genesis 1. Here the same noun in the construct. The start of the fruit of the earth. Asher natatha li Yahweh, which Yahweh has given, which you have given to me, O Yahweh. I'm sorry about that. Second person. A little tricky here, this form natatha, because we have this hey on the end. Could trip us up. This is simply the vowel written plain A with a vowel letter. This is not an object suffix and it's not a feminine form. It looks, you know, first glance, perhaps you might be inclined to think it's the third feminine form, but that would have a nun, not a tau, in the third root position. Natanna. Here we have second person form, but we normally just have the comments written under the tau. Here we have the comments hey, the vowel letter associated with it. So it's somewhat unusual, but does occur elsewhere as well. So which you gave to me, O Yahweh. Again, here, this is remember in the context, this is the Israelite who's coming. He's given his offering. The priest has put it on the altar. And now the worshiper is sort of making this confession that he trusts that Yahweh is the one who brought them out, and now he's offering to God the first fruit of his lamb. So he's speaking now not of God, but to God. And the last phrase, Wahinech to lifnei Yahweh Elohecha, Wayishtachowitha lifnei Yahweh Elohecha. So, but the quotation ends here, which you have given to me, O Yahweh. That ends the quotation. The Achnach there indicates the break. And now this last phrase. Now we come to instruction. The you here is not the person speaking to Yahweh, but God telling the person what to do. So a shift of subject here, even though we remain second person. This could be tricky if you don't catch the fact that the quotation has ended. Then you shall, literally, hifil from nuk, you shall cause it to rest. Here, you shall mean simply put it down. He's got the offering in his hand. You shall put it down, see. You shall, on before Yahweh, lifnei Yahweh Elohecha, before Yahweh your God. And you shall do obeisance, wihishtah kuitha, or you shall worship. I kind of like here the more literal do obeisance translation. This isn't, you know, sometimes worship to us is sort of an abstract concept. But here, I think God is being quite specific. He says to them, place it on the altar and bow down. As put, you know, this word, hishtakawa, literally means to put your nose, your face on the ground. And you see this in iconography from the ancient Near East, where you get worshipers either on their knees with their face on the ground or elsewhere described as lying flat on their stomach with their face on the ground. And I think that's probably how we should translate this. So we should take this quite literally and not abstract it to the notion of worship, but you shall place it on the altar and do obeisance before Yahweh your God. So that's our text. Just a comment to wrap things up here. I mentioned at the outset that Gerhard von Rad had made this passage the central focal point of his theology of the Old Testament, saying it was the text around which the whole Pentateuch had originally coalesced. While von Rad is wrong about the role of the text in the formation of the Pentateuch, it's nonetheless an important text, and what makes it important is the affirmation that we get here about the relationship between God and Israel and how Israel became the people of God. That this relationship is of God's doing, not of Israel's doing. And this is the way, one way at least, in which the gospel is expressed in the Old Testament. Israel did not choose Yahweh. Yahweh chose Israel out of his own grace and compassion and had mercy upon them. He promised to redeem them, and he did redeem them. And here in this text, we wouldn't be going too far to say that this text gives us a type of the redemption of Christ and all creation, redemption of the church and all creation by Christ. Texts like this are often misunderstood. They represent the response of faith to the grace of God. And sometimes we tend to misread them as though they are earning God's favor by keeping these things. But clearly the text makes it clear that God has done these things out of his own great mercy and not because the Israelites were either big and important or because they were particularly faithful. And so this text always, I read this in conjunction with another passage from the Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 7, verse 6 and following, where God reminds the Israelites, they are a people concentrated before the Lord. He chose them out of all the peoples of the earth to be his segulah, his special possession. Not because you're the most numerous of the peoples, indeed, you're the smallest of the peoples, but because the Lord favored you and kept the oath that he made to your fathers. And, I think if we read all of these texts in light of passages like Deuteronomy 7 and 6, we will understand that these passages are to be understood as the response of faith to God's grace and redemption and not the cause of them. And so, therefore, entirely appropriate text to communicate the gospel on this first Sunday in Lent. Thank you very much.